big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Content warning. This podcast is intended for adult audiences. We advise discretion as this episode contains frank discussions of adult themes and explicit language.
And then I wake up on a random, I think, Tuesday, and I see Brian Noem's tits everywhere. And I was just like, what is happening? Because one, I didn't get those photos. Two, who told, you know?
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night and good luck.
Hey, folks, and welcome back to the Lincoln Project podcast. Our guest today is Shai Rayne Sotomayor. Now, you may or may not know that name, but you know the story in which she is a key player. Shai, we'll get to the terminology properly in a moment, the counterpart to Byron Noem's Secret Life. And the story blew up a few months ago that Byron Noem had a long-running online relationship with you, Shai, was into a rabbit hole, which I did not know existed until now, but the whole bimbo fetish stuff. I wanted to have you on the show, not because of the lurid, like, you know, Byron Noem wearing spandex and balloon titties, but I wanted to ask you about the dynamics of the relationships that you've observed and the relationship you saw there as an example of this sort of weird niche of MAGA dudes who are on some kind of down low, not necessarily gay, but in some kind of down low that conflicts with their public image, the public image of their families and their public image of their politics and all that. So I wanted to welcome you to the show and thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
And tell us first off, what's the best way to describe your role in the relationship you had with Byron?
It definitely had a bit of character development in the end, but it was very professional in the beginning. I was his sex worker. He paid me for sessions, mm-hmm. and that was kind of the sentence. Later down the years, it developed into something very, very personal, something sure. that crossed my own boundaries. I tried to keep those with Brian. He never really liked that. He loved to have his own boundaries, but never liked mine. And that's when I started kind of pulling away from him. Outside of the fact of finding out who he was, I was not too happy knowing who was behind the screen kind of thing.
Right. So he started trying this sort of topping from the bottom thing mm-hmm. with you to keep his boundaries, but not your boundaries. When you met him, you met him online in some context, I guess, right? I mean, and how did it unfold that you learned about who he was, who he was married to? How did that sort of emerge into the context of the relationship you guys had online?
So in the very beginning, I didn't know much information outside that he said he was a CEO from Chicago, I believe. And I was just like, okay. You know, that's fairly common, being very nondescript. Okay. And it was like that for, 5-6 years. COVID happened and I didn't hear from him. I think everybody kind of took a hiatus from the internet on certain things. And when he reached back to me, it was actually October 2025. He reached back to me and he was like, hey, you know, do you remember me? And this was just under his alias that he used. And I was like, yeah, actually, I do.
Right.
You know, I typically when you spend almost tens of thousands of dollars on me, I kind of remember you. You have a little compartment in my head.
sure, that would be a factor.
He's like, okay, I want to text you. I want to have phone calls. I want to pay for these kind of sessions. And I'm like, okay. So he paid for my number and we had our first phone call. And I'm like, this voice sounds familiar. You know, like I feel like I've heard it in passing. I'm like, okay. And then when I looked at my PayPal transactions, when you send up to a certain amount of PayPal, you have to have your legal name, address, stuff like that within your profile. So I saw Brian Gnome's name and I was like, Gnome. I'm like, that seems familiar. And she wasn't quite in the news for everything that happened in January obviously.
It is confirmed an ICE officer now is thought to have fatally shot a woman in South Minneapolis.
Almost simultaneously, the first shot is fired. Officers step back. Within 5 seconds, 9 more shots. And soon after, the officer is heard. Freddie died at the scene.
This individual who came with weapons and ammunition to stop a law enforcement operation of federal law enforcement officers committed an act of domestic terrorism. That's the facts.
So I was just like, okay, that sounds familiar. And I go to my husband. I was like, hey, I'm like, does the Gnome name mean anything to you? Because he's more in the political side of things than I am.
Sure.
And he was just like, yeah. He's like, do you mean like Christy Gnome? I'm like, is she married? And he's like, yeah. So we found an interview that he did with, I think, Moms of America. And he was boasting about how, like, Christy was this amazing woman and godsend. And I was listening to it and my jaw hit the floor. I was like, this is him.
But we don't really talk a lot about the men beside the ladies. And something that really impressed me about the first gentleman of South Dakota was how he said that he supports her and he stands beside her. This doesn't bother him at all. They're a team together.
I am the one who's supposed to protect her. As husbands, there's one person responsible for protecting our wives, and that's us. We try to focus on today. You know, a lot of times we get sidetracked with looking in the past, and we get sidetracked looking way up in the future. And when we do that, we miss what opportunities are before us today. And so, you know, I believe God's given us this day to capitalize on. And we don't want to focus on something that's 3-4 years down the road.
I'm like, there's no doubt. Like, maybe he was a little tipsy on the phone. Like,
sure.
But that was his voice. That was Brian Gnome's voice. I was bewildered. I couldn't believe it. Cause it's like, if you're going to fake a name or a person, are you faking Brian Gnome? You know what I mean? Like, that's such a weird
right. Right. So I was like, my name is John Smith.
Right. You could have done anything. And I was just like, okay, that's weird. And the more we talked and the more I got kind of like little details out of him, more things lined up with him. And I was just like, okay, this is it.
When did he roll in with you on like the bimbo fetish stuff? Because again, this is a rabbit hole I had no idea existed like 6 months ago. And I was reading some stories on Reddit about it, about Brian Gnome, and like, this is a whole thing that's out there. This is a much bigger thing in our country than I had ever imagined.
So that came on pretty hot and heavy in October. He was really about like just kind of worshiping me as like a dom and as a woman in the beginning, which was you know, great fun. And that's, you know, pretty accurate for the kind of clientele I get. So, but he started like tiptoeing around it. And I was just like, oh, that's what you're into. You know, go for it. You know, who am I to judge?
I do love you.
Do you? Mm-hmm. So much better than your wife, aren't I?
You're so much better.
So how many drinks are we on?
A lot. Shut up. You're so amazing.
Yeah?
Yeah, you make me drink.
Oh, I don't make you do anything.
Yeah, you do.
Oh, do I?
You're the boss.
I am the boss.
So, you tell me what to do and I'll do it.
That's a dangerous saying.
It's okay.
Oh, is it?
I don't care what you're really into.
Hell, I'm a libertarian. Go crazy.
Right. Right. Go crazy.
Don't hurt the kids or the livestock, and you can do what you want.
And I think I got more curious on how far he would take it, knowing who he was and kind of seeing his life in the public eye. So, you know, he would go deeper and deeper into it. And I was just like, oh, yeah. And what else? You know, what else do you want to do? And then he started talking about how he wanted these breast implants and BBL and hair implants. And I was just like, well, you need the hair implants anyways. Like, yeah.
So do you think part of what drives that? And I again, like I said, this is a rabbit hole I'm new to. But what do you think what drives him in that was this sort of Midwestern value set where all of a sudden his wife is the star, the breadwinner, the main figure around, and he's the guy who's home in the insurance office. Do you think this would have happened if he had just been a regular guy? Would it have gone to this level with him? Would he have like sought that level of transformation and domination if it was just a regular person? Or do you think it's the politics around him had something to do with it?
So I definitely think the two kind of play off each other. I think no matter what, sure, he would have been into this fetish, and that's all fine and dandy. But I think what kind of drove it a little bit harder was the not wanting it to be public and the pressure that he was under. And that's something pretty common with CEOs or men in a higher stature, is that they love to be submissive. Sure. It's a golden rules generally.
Right.
And so I think he would have always been a submissive man, or is a submissive man. He just doesn't give me that kind of energy. You know what I mean? But with everything else, I think maybe seeing the transformation that Christy did, and he kind of liked that and maybe fantasized about it himself, because from my own personal talks with him, he had his own like ladies' underwear, like he had his own personal stash of stuff.
We could get you a nice little collar that says Crystal on it.
Yeah.
For your name that you've chosen.
Mm-hmm.
I think Crystal fits you.
You think?
I know. Have your big bimbo out and a nice pretty lace thong, since you like wearing thongs so much.
I do.
Yeah. What's the color of your thong that you have on?
It's nude.
Nude? We gotta get you more exciting panties.
Okay.
I bet you would wear my thongs, wouldn't you?
I would.
Maybe one day I can send you some. Well, you already like wearing thongs, don't you?
I do.
Might as well just dress you up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he was maybe jealous, or maybe just liked the transformation that he saw in front of him.
Well, I mean, she went through a fairly radical transformation, the sort of fox makeover, as they call it.
Yeah.
And I guess if this was one of his things deep down inside, it was probably a combination of triggering and arousing at the same time for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think it definitely gravitates around that.
So as you went in, he comes back into your world in 2025, in late in the year 2025. And then at some point, you put this together with the PayPal information. You start putting the two and two together. When did you start to feel the stress of it with the things you knew she was doing?
Honestly,
as the head of DHS.
Honestly, it was probably when the shooting with Good. I honestly started reaching out to press and lawyers, because there was a lot of concerns. Right. I found out that he was talking to me on a business phone, and I was like, and he was paying me through that business phone. And I'm like, I doubt he's transferring personal funds into his business account and then paying me Because later to find out, he was also talking about 5 or 6 different girls at the same time and somehow
came up with it. Oh, I had not seen that. That's fascinating.
I looked at a lot of the other interviews and I was looking at the screenshots they also provided. And a lot of us were talking on the same night. So he was juggling a lot. And so my first thought was like, I don't want to be used for any kind of like fraud for taxes or anything with like his business. So I started reaching out to like the press and everything around January and got nowhere. And nobody either said, hey, we don't want to touch this. You know, it's not our deal. And I was just like, okay, you know, I can't make somebody do something. So I just, you know, kept trying and was getting nowhere. And I was like, you know what? Maybe this is my sign. I'm not supposed to come forward to find out. I'm not supposed to come forward yet. So after Alex Petty, I felt like things got really tight with him because he actually sent me a message. It was like, hey, things are bad. Things are bad with the family. I got to go. Won't be back. And it was like a very frantic text. Like he was in a panic. So I was like, okay, this is going to be the last I hear from him. I don't need to come forward about anything. Maybe things are taking care of everything. And then I wake up on a random, I think Tuesday, and I see Brian Nome's tits everywhere. I was just like, what is happening? Because one, I didn't get those photos. Two, who told, you know? Like, so I was like, okay, I found the original reporter and I decided to come forward with him because I was just like, hey, here's my story. I've been trying to come out. And he's like, let me call you in 10 minutes. And it kind of snowballed from there.
I'm kind of blown away because I had missed the fact that he was talking to other women, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like it must be rude to cheat on your dominatrix while you're cheating on your wife.
It's messy. It's so messy. And especially with how personal he was getting with me. I know for a fact he wasn't getting that personal with anybody else. When he told me, like, I take everything with a grain of salt, obviously, in sex work. But when he told me, he's like, oh, I don't talk to other girls like you. You know, I don't, you know, there's women out there that, you know, they don't talk to me like this. And I was just like, okay, you know, there was like a sincerity behind that. And that's when I felt like it went from me being dom to he wanting to step out of that space to, you know, what's your favorite movie? Do you like Chinese food?
Uh-huh.
You know, what's your favorite Christmas movie? Because we talked through the holidays. You know, he got pretty personal and just kind of cozy with me. And that's when I was just like, this is professional, you know? I have my own life. Right. I have my own spouse. We're monogamous, you know? And especially when he started talking about, you know, I could see us leaving our spouses for each other.
Would you ever marry me?
Oh, you want to be married to your God.
I mean, who would be?
And I'm just like, I don't see that.
Oh, could you?
Right. Like, you could because you have grandbabies. Like.
Yeah, that's it. It is striking that he apparently, I read that he'd sent you some texts that were basically like insulting to Christy, insulting to his family. Mm-hmm. And they, I mean, talk to us a little bit about that. Cause that strikes me as like one more line that if this was just him having a fetish, he probably wouldn't have crossed, but it seems like there's something deeper broken inside of him than that.
I think so. It's so funny. He would teeter with wanting to hear about me saying, you know, fuck your wife, fuck your family, you know, I deserve the money. And that very much falls into like the thin dom fetish that he
had. Dom, right.
And there would be times where, I don't know, he was high on his horse and I would try to say something about Christy. It wasn't like it was out of left field, but there was times he was like, you know, what's your opinion? And I'm like, do you want, you know, sugarcoated, or do you want an actual list of what's wrong with your wife? And he's like, give me the list. And I would, you know, say everything that I needed to say about Christy, no shame in it. And he's like, he would get an attitude about it. He'd like, well, you can't believe everything in the news. I'm like, okay. So I would tease him about that. I'm like, you say you can't believe everything in the news. I'm like, she wrote a book. it was like a bio. Like, she talked about herself.
Killing the dog.
You know, shooting dog.
Kristi Noem speaking out in her first TV interview about fatally shooting her dog because she says the animal was untrainable. Many say the revelation torpedoed her chances of being Donald Trump's running mate, but Noem is calling the controversy fake news.
Kristi Noem is hitting back at the firestorm raging over her shooting her dog to death.
She attacked me, and it was a hard decision.
The South Dakota governor tells Sean Hannity she had to put her dog Cricket down after the animal ate the neighbor's chickens and tried to bite her.
And I had a choice between keeping my small children and other people safe or a dangerous animal, and I chose the safety of my children.
Noem first made the revelation in her new autobiography, No Going Back.
It was a dog that was extremely dangerous. It had come to us from a family who had found her way too aggressive. Sean, you know how the fake news works. They leave out some or most of the facts of a story. They put the worst spin on it.
Cricket was a wire-haired pointer like this one, bred for hunting birds. Social media is reacting swiftly to the interview. The old fake news excuse goes one comment. She is blaming anything else but herself.
And he's like, oh, you know, people focus on the wrong things. And I'm like, I think we're focusing on the right things, friend. Like,
shooting the dog seems like the right thing to focus on.
Right. Yeah. And I was just like, you know, this is, I could definitely tell that there was some tension. I was like, you know what? You don't want to talk about it. That's fine. You know, I'm here for a paycheck, not to like bitch about your wife legitimately. You know what I mean? And he said, oh, I guess we just don't align politically. I'm like, we never talked politics outside of like me figuring out who you are and discovering you're Kristi Noem's husband.
Did you think that I wouldn't find out who you are?
I knew you knew.
Do you care that I know?
It doesn't matter.
Right, it doesn't.
Is it?
No.
I mean, it is what it is.
I mean, that's very fair.
I don't love the fact that you know who I am.
So, talk to me about how it. What was the coda? The ending. What was the part where he just where you and he were like, that's it.
So he came. He likes to dip out and be like, hey, I'm not going to be back. I'm going to try to be better. You know, all this and that. He was using rehab as a crutch like since January. And I think he's finally in rehab. I'm not too sure, but he's been using that crutch since January. And I was just like, okay, whatever, you know, you're going to dip and you'll come back. A week later, he came back pretty heavy, paid me quite a bit of money. And it was like, hey, I want to talk. I want to talk on the phone. I'm like, bro, it's midnight where I'm at. I'm in bed.
Right.
Like he's like, can we please talk? And I was just like, dude, I'm like, I'm going to bed. If you want to talk tomorrow, we can talk tomorrow. Never heard from him. A day later, the news pops up. So he was still talking to me as people were like reporting on him and submitting like screenshots. And I think he was trying to get one last hoo-ha, you know, out of it.
Right.
You know, I don't know, but it dropped off, I believe, early May, April, I think.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what you do, from my understanding, is a lot of it is a psychological sort of interchange with these people. They're giving you power over their life in some way, whether it's financial or sexual or personal or psychological. And I want to get back to this thing because I'm an ex-Republican, and I know we used to have a joke in the Republican Party, like, oh, is that guy gay?
Mm-hmm.
No, he's not conservative enough to be gay. It was always like the guys who were like way out there on the wing that were the guys who were the deepest in the closet.
Yeah.
You know, and as somebody one time joked, it's like, he's so deep in the closet, he's in Narnia, you know? But right. when you see this kind of sort of personality with guys who want to be dominated, who want to be made into bimbo, sissy, whatever stuff, what is the through line with that? Because I'm trying to understand like how a guy from the upper Midwest, the most staid, conservative, you know, Lutheran sort of background.
Yeah.
How do they get into, what's the feeder system that brings a Byron gnome into Findom and Bimbo Sissy transformation?
I honestly feel like it's just a Republican thing. Like, I've come across a lot of submissives that are,
sure,
you know, right wing, and they, you know, would do just about anything for Trump. And it's just like, but they're in my DMs wanting to wear thongs and lingerie and suck dick for me. And I'm just like, okay, you're a roller coaster of a person. Like, I wish I had a psych degree so I could really analyze these brains, because they have to be right. That interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like something I know culturally about my old party is, you know, the number of guys breaking Grindr is not a secret, right?
Yeah.
At Republican conventions, yep. Conservative conventions, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not a secret. It's not a secret. There are a lot of guys that are in that space or in that world. And you know what? Who cares?
Right.
Who cares? Right. You're gay. Come out. Be gay. Who cares?
Right.
But it strikes me that some of these guys, like Gnome, I mean, he's into cross-dressing, but he doesn't strike me as gay.
I think he would be more...
You know better than me.
I think he would be a little bit more fluid, because he did talk about doing, like, sexual acts on men for me. Mm. And I just don't see, like, a cis straight male saying that. And even in a fantasy world, you know what I mean?
Right.
I feel like if you're straight to the bone, you're straight to the bone. But, and people always question me, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with this. Why are you speaking on it? You know, all this and that. It's like, because he has stood toe to toe with Christy on the anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ.
Yep.
And honestly, maybe if he was an average Joe, I wouldn't have gone to the Daily Mail.
Sure.
But you don't get...
That was exactly my next question. It's like, if he hadn't been so far out there backing Christie and the Trump anti-LGBT stuff,
mm-hmm.
Would it have been a harder decision for you to go to the press?
I don't think, because this is honestly the first time I've ever gone to the press about a client. I've been a sex worker for, you know, almost 13 years in September, and I have never felt the need once, or, you know, had even fuel to go to the press about anything until I found out I had somebody of a larger political party higher up in my DMs on a business phone. And then he goes on, you know, whatever interviews, and it's like, oh yeah, God, you know, Christy is God's gift to me, and everything she has said is right, and all this and that. And it's like, you can't do that. I have too many morals to be allowed that to happen. I feel like if I just stayed quiet during all of this, and it came out that I was quiet about this, I would be a traitor, because who am I?
Sure.
You know what I mean?
No, I get that for sure.
You know, I'm not,
I mean,
I'm too loud about my opinions. I am now more days because I have the platform for it. But like,
right.
I couldn't just stand by. I felt so guilty when, you know, the Good Family happened and Alex Petty and, mm-hmm. you know, these were unnecessary awful. Deaths, children in ICE camps. Like, you don't get to be married to her and say you stand with her and then say, oh, I want to be a trans bimbo bitch. You don't get to do that with
me. Right. He's living an external life that he would deny to everyone else.
Yeah.
And that she and the administration would certainly deny to other people.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't harm people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and like I said, if that's the case, if that's your thing, go nuts.
Absolutely.
Go buck wild. Do your thing.
I have
Everybody's got something they like.
Yeah. And I have a lot of guys who are still submissive, who still talk to me even after everything. And it's like, you know, if they know they don't have that fear because they're not a shitty person. You know what I mean? I think ultimately that's what it boils down to. Don't be a shit person behind the screen. Don't be a shit person.
No, I think that. And I think that, you know, as someone who's been a sex worker, you have a perspective on the human, you know, that there's a great line from the movie, The Crying Game. The guy's sitting at the bar, and Stephen Ray sitting at the bar, he's talking to Jim Broadbent, And he says, I don't understand why I love her, because he's in love with a trans woman in the movie, right? And Jim Broadbent looks at him and goes, who knows the secrets of the human heart? And you see, you know the secrets of a lot of the human heart, because I think you have that, you know, to do what you do and be good at what you do, you have to have that perspective. You have to understand at some gut level the psychology of these folks. And would you say that most of the people that you interact with, most of them just want to feel complete about their sexuality in some way, right? Is that the right perspective on it?
Yeah, honestly, yes. Of what it boils down to at the end of the day, they want to feel accepted and that they're not weird for what they like. Even if it's like, I like big boobs and I want to wear girls' panties. That's great. Do it. You know what I mean?
God bless you.
And I am definitely,
like I said, don't frighten the children or hurt the livestock and you're fine.
Right. Absolutely. And that's what I always tell people. I'm like, as long as you're not hurting me, you're not hurting yourself and you're not hurting others, I don't care what you do. I don't care. I'm here to support you, make sure we're both having a great time and making sure that you're still comfortable, because I still have to make sure that my clients are comfortable in what they're doing, because you don't need to perform for me. I don't need to see anything. You know, if you just want to pay for my time, talk, watch a movie, great, we can do that. You know, but at the end of the day, it's about feeling comfortable in your own skin and feeling like you're not some weirdo for liking what you like.
I think there's a lot of that in that there's a lot of this probably drives a lot of those Republican men, and as you said, sort of the CEO and leadership and political leadership types towards this, because they do exist in a political party that is very regimented about what you can be. It's very like, you are allowed to be a heterosexual white dude who is attracted to blonde women with medium sized breasts who want to have babies.
Yes.
That they're told that they've got one lane they can be in. And I think that may be part of why you feel transgressive to them and you feel exciting to them, because they're like, hey, now I'm out, you know, now I'm in a different space. Now I'm in somewhere where I'm not feeling like, you know, that I'm following the party line on everything.
Absolutely. So. I think that side, its whole like desire is to put you in a box and make sure you listen. And I think that goes deeper than just...
Not in the fun way.
Yeah, not in the fun way. And I think that goes deeper than just the surface level. I think that a lot of them take that to their core. Like, I'm only supposed to like you said, you know, blondes, little bodies and just, fertilize, you know, women and all that kind of stuff. I feel like when you see sex workers, especially somebody who's like me, who, you know, embodies creativity and no judgment, that's exciting. When I feel like that should be a base, you know?
But I think it's fascinating because your world is interestingly a lot like what we do in politics. You try to understand people.
Yep.
You try to give them something of what they want, but not everything of what they want. You don't want to give them everything they want all at once. And it takes a sort of sense of judgment about what people, on the one hand, say they need, on the other hand, what they show you they need.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think that aligns with Brian, because he showed me that he, you know, wanted to be like this outrageous, crazy bimbo. But I think underneath it all, he wanted to be heard. I think he wanted somebody to kind of talk to, because a lot of the times when we were talking, he was home alone, you know.
Sure.
You know, it's not like she was around.
Political spouse is a lonely life.
Yeah. It's not like,
and she's got a boyfriend and everybody fucking knows it.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's crazy. And
did he ever bring that up, that Corey Lewandowski was cucking him on live television?
You know, I think at some point I mentioned that. I'm like, do you think, you know, Christy cheating is retaliation? And he's like, no, I don't think she knows. And I was just like, okay, so she's just cheating to cheat on you?
She's cheating to be, okay, well.
I'm like, okay. That's...
Yeah, that doesn't make her seem like a better person there, Byron.
No. I'm like, okay. I'm like, because I kind of felt like, because I don't know how much of the Daily Mail that you read, but there was a point where
Christy actually stepped into his office while we were on the phone. I was very much a, who are you talking to? Kind of like shrill voice. And I was just like, oh, crap. I instantly was like quiet. He had me somewhere in his pocket. I could hear rustling. And all I hear is, leave me alone. I'm on a work call. I'm working. And she's like, come to bed. And then she walks away and he talks to me for like another 30 minutes. It's just, it was crazy.
Well, I have to say, this is an amazing, look at the psychology of not only Byron Noem, but of a whole category of MAGA male. And Shai, I really want to thank you for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. Where can people find you online?
So you can find me on Twitter. I'm under the name Raylan Riley. And you can just about Google that, or even just Google Byron Noem's Dom, and I'm pretty easily found through that too. But Raylan Riley is generally where you're going to find me on Twitter, any kind of socials.
Okay. Well, listen, I really appreciate you coming on the show. It was a lot of fun. And thank you so much for your honesty and for putting this out there, because I know it had to be a weird spot for you. It like facing up suddenly to this bizarre media machine that's out there. But really appreciate it. And thank you again. And we'll talk to you sometime soon.
Yeah, thank you. I really enjoyed it.
The Lincoln Project Podcast is a Lincoln Project production. Executive produced by Whitney Hayes, Ben Howe, and Joey Wartner-Cheney. Edited by Riley Main. Hey, folks, if you want to support the Lincoln Project's work against Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and this MAGA craziness, go to action.lincolnproject.us/helplp. If you'd like to get in touch or have suggestions for a guest or a show topic, or just want to say hi, our email is podcast@lincolnproject.us. For our MAGA friends, please, no more nudes. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again next time.
And good luck.